Okay.
Hi, and welcome to Paragraph Despair. I'm Chris.
And I'm Anton.
And this is the show where we make a game out of everything.
Is that what it is?
Is it?
I mean, we do. I just didn't know that was the intent of the show.
I feel like we change what the show is each week.
Originally, the show was to help me get through a breakup.
Well, my way of putting it is actually a pretty concise way of talking about it.
Which is, it's a show where we make everything to a game. Except you do that, and I don't
do it so good. Yeah, I make games so you can get points. But we do have a point system, mm-hmm. and we'll just go over the score. It is 20 Chris, which is me, and 17 Anton, which is you.
Yeah, you're right. I agree.
So I'm winning. Because Anton made one game, which he never makes games, and then he gave me all the points.
You're just too good at that game.
Do I have to tell the general rules?
You can just gloss whatever you think is right.
Well, points are currency and could be traded, although we've never been in that situation.
No, and we're supposed to do a big end of the year thing too, which is fast approaching.
Oh, yeah. Well, rules must be unanimously agreed upon. Can only get points for rules after the rule is created. Each episode we announce points. Points reset every quarter or this year. And then there's a big event. Okay. That's it.
All right.
We're going to get into the first segments.
The meat.
The meat and potatoes. We are recording live in the same room.
Yeah.
Which we've only done once.
We did it at your house or apartment. Now we're at my apartment.
Yeah. So if you hear street noise or this chair creaking, that's what that is.
Creaky old chairs.
All right. I have a new segment.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Car Talk.
I don't know if I can participate.
Earlier today, it sounds like, make a segment off of something you've been really thinking about last week. And I haven't been thinking of anything else except how to get this car I just bought.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 2013 Honda Fit.
And what does that look like for maybe most folks who aren't familiar with the Fit line?
It looks like a car you'd give to a small child. Or
it does actually kind of remind me of this like Fisher Price car that I had growing up.
It's very small. Like it does feel like fragile almost, but I love it.
Fragile when you're driving it?
No, like fragile when you're looking at it.
Got it.
When you drive it, it's fine.
What led you to get in a car?
I was like, I gotta get out of the city whenever I want before the zombie apocalypse happens.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the last place you want to be is the roadway if you've seen any movie ever.
That's true. But, you know, I have one now. So it's going to make going wherever I want. I think just over the last year and a half, everyone's stuck inside. I'm just really, like, a car can be useful now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've lived in New York for 10 years, and I've never needed a car.
What was the breaking point where you're like, man, I got to get a car?
We were taking a bus for Thanksgiving, and we had been talking about it for the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And the bus was, like, 90 degrees.
Whoa, why?
I don't know. And then we talked, like, we asked the bus driver, and he's like, I can't figure it out. And so, like, and I've been taking the bus, you know, Greyhound and Coach USA for 10 years. For what it is, it's fine. I get too cranky. I'm too old now.
Mm-hmm.
I need the road. I need the freedom.
So, hot bus...
Hot bus.
Made you want to get a car.
Yeah.
What made you want to get this specific car? Because, like,
okay.
It seemed like out of the gate you knew you wanted to get a Honda Fit.
No, it took some, like, just looking around. Because we were looking at price, but then that was the wrong way of doing it, I realized.
Mm.
Because you get such a varying degrees of cars for that price.
Mm.
And the thing that I wanted, I didn't just want to get a car. I wanted to get a good value. Mm-hmm. Especially right now when car prices are insane. Like, used car prices are insane.
Because everybody wants to buy a car?
Well, there's a shortage. There's a chip shortage that they use for the computer chip
in the cars,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I had no idea. So, like, the GPU for the car.
Yeah.
From all those blockchain people.
Right, right. Everyone's buying new cars so they can mine for Bitcoin. And so that's created demand for used cars because people are going, oh, well, it's going to take me 6 months or so to get for this new car to come in. I'll just buy a year-old, two-year-old used car.
Uh-huh.
And then people that normally buy, well, I don't know normally, but like people that would probably go to the one- or two-year-old car, it's like, well, those prices are that much because of the people buying new cars and buying these, then I'm going to buy this older car. And then it's just a chain of rising prices.
So you didn't, you decided, let's not do prices. So what was your strategy?
It was kind of prices. It was a mixture of things. It was price, brand, and kind of functionality and reliability. So I kind of
in
narrowed
that order.
It. Yeah, well, eventually I just found one car that I could get in that price range that was very reliable. I mean, not going to what I've had for 4 days. and I could get for that price, and I could get like somewhat of a mod. Like, it's a 2013, it's still pretty old, but like, newer cars last a little longer, and you know, of that year and price, and I think the car is 110,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about Honda Fits is like, it's completely normal for this car to go over 200,000 miles.
Oh, well.
Yes, I mean, there's one.
What's the highest you ever got a car in terms of mileage?
The last car I had was 10 years ago, and I don't even remember. But yeah, it did either. Probably have over 100,000. And then, yeah, so the Honda Fits, I mean, there's one I saw it was reading online this guy had for over 500,000 miles.
Wow.
So that's I found the car. We made some, like, concessions, you know. you gotta, for, you know, some scratches and dings and dents don't mean much to me. I can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rusting. It's not, you know, a piece of junk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got some character to it.
Yeah.
And so what we did was I took it over to a mechanic. Mechanic looked it over. Mm-hmm. You flip them $100 and they say if it's good or bad.
So they basically, they take the car in.
Yeah.
They take your $100. They probably browse the internet for 30 minutes
yep.
and say, hey, it looks good.
Yeah. And then they go, oh, and if it breaks, come here.
Yeah.
I did that because we were at one point, I was going to buy a 2009 Honda Fit that was upstate that my dad was really, it was like clean. It was like super clean. It had only 80,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad was talking to the dealer, and the dealer's like, oh, yeah, I know your uncle because my uncle's mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And the dealer's like, yeah, we've taken stuff to his garage. So then I call my uncle, and I go, is this dealer legit? He said he's taking stuff. And he's like, I've never done any work for that guy. What is he talking about?
Oh, wow.
And then I asked my uncle, he's like, get the newer one. Like, completely trashed that first plan. So I went for the 13 Honda Fit.
So, I've seen your Honda Fit. It seems like the perfect city car.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is, you know, usually when I, like, go to the car, like, if I'm leaving the store or, like, walking to it, there's just usually, like, a flock of about 6 to 12 women just throwing themselves over it.
Oh, I bet.
So, yeah. You know, you get a broom, chase them away. And, yeah.
So one of your notes here on our show plan says just the word horsepower.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, I'm a car guy now. Right?
Yeah.
So I got to tell you what the, you know, what's under the hood.
Okay.
It's got an engine.
Yeah.
With horsepower.
Is it a V4, V6?
Sure.
It's a two-stroke, like a lawnmower?
It's basically a lawnmower engine.
I did a while back look into...
perfect timing. There's a motorcycle outside. Yes. You can probably hear it.
It's good timing for last episode,
too. There's going to be a lot of sound effects.
Yeah. It's to give you the feel like you're here with us.
Yeah, in this room with high ceilings.
Is that bad for recording?
You can probably hear a little echo, maybe.
Oh, it could be. I feel like a lot of technology today for recording should make up for that in software.
I hope so.
So we'll find out.
Let me check my... and driving in the city is not as... I mean, it's bad.
You hate driving in the city.
I do. But it's a little easier with your own car.
Oh, yeah? What makes the difference? Not worried about dinging it or something?
No, it's like when we rented that car a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
they gave me a huge Subaru SUV.
Right.
I don't want to drive that big thing around the city.
So you feel nimble with this? I always get like an
unwieldy, this? Yeah. It's very easy to drive. It's very small. It's got great storage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just working for me.
It looks like it's going to be... the main reason I got rid of a car when we first moved here, we had a car for about 9 months when we moved to Brooklyn originally. And most of my driving of it was to the next parking spot. And that was just too irritating. But your car is quite a bit smaller and seems more nimble and maneuverable than...
Well, yours was pretty small.
It's pretty small. I had a Mazda 3.
Yeah, this is pretty small.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like we keep having the need to move stuff and then for, like, popping up to visit family and...
Yeah.
I would just rather have it.
It was a lot more convenient to just make a trip and go visit people.
Yeah.
I do like the train.
You don't have to, you have to go on a 90-degree bus.
You can't take the train to Binghamton, right?
No. That might have played in if that was a...
I mean, it's... How much money do you think a trip to Binghamton costs by car with gas and all that?
I mean, this thing, $30 filled up the tank.
Mm.
And I've been driving around on full for like 2 days.
Wow. So, possibly 30.
It's 36 miles to a gallon. It's about 180 miles. I might be wrong on that.
Could be, I don't know.
Couple gallons, probably $10-15.
Oh, round trip?
No, maybe just there. I would say $20, 20 to 25 round trip.
That's way better than the train. Train is like on average 45 per person each way, so it's 180 round trip.
Sometimes I'd pay 160 for two people
for the train trip,
for the bus.
Oh, because of Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the other piece of it is like, I don't know how much you spent on this car, but in the long run, it probably is cheaper.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Probably not. But.
It feels cheaper.
Yeah. I just feel like the need to go places and get out of the apartment now more than I ever did.
Mm.
I feel like the pandemic really probably changed my mind on owning a car.
Well, now we can go upstate and have cabin trips way more often.
That's true. Well, that's another thing.
We gotta go in on that house.
If we buy an Airbnb called... What do we call it? You know how they have a name?
Like they name the houses?
Yeah, they name the houses after cabin. Like, it's like the home away cabin. Or like, what would ours be called?
Cotta.
What's that mean?
It's just our first initials.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Cotta Cottage.
Well, I drove here.
Yep.
20 minutes. Took me an hour and a half last week.
To drive here?
No, it took me an hour and a half on the train to get to rock climbing.
Yeah. You were there so early.
Yeah.
You were surprised at how easy you got here.
Yeah.
Well, I'm jealous. And I think that was the point of this segment, was to make me jealous.
Yep. That's the end of the segment.
Okay. And that's car talk.
That's car talk.
All right. So our next segment, I've been trying to pay more attention to money because, I don't know, I'd like to retire at some point. And
I don't. I just throw my money buying cars left and right.
And I feel like I am not very financially sound with how I am managing my money. And I've been seeing some murmurs of inflation occurring.
Well, there's no murmurs. It's already happening, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, but I don't know this. I mean, inflation is constantly happening. It just sounds like it's worse. What do you know about this?
I don't know anything except that everything's more expensive.
Yeah. I mean, everything always does get more expensive.
That's true.
But the question is, I am not good with investment. I have all my money in the bank, and I should probably invest in something.
Yeah. You should invest in my app, Turd.
I might give you some money for it if you actually seriously pursue it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
It's a hard networking problem. And if you're curious about Turd, I think 2 episodes back, episode 8 is when we talk about Turd.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you think that these murmurs about inflation and all that are a ploy by the cryptocurrency folks to start putting that seed of doubt in our current financial systems so that people will invest in cryptocurrency?
No.
You don't think that?
Because I don't think people really in the crypto or that, they couldn't orchestrate something that is probably, inflation's probably caused by, a multitude of factors.
What do you think some of those factors are?
Well, like how I was just talking about the used car shortage.
Yep.
And the chip shortage.
So the value, the price goes up.
Right.
But why wouldn't the price just go back down after the shortage is over?
Well, we're still in the shortage.
Okay.
And then there's probably just such a volatile market of like supply and demand. Those are all words I've heard before.
Yes. You sound very financial.
Because, if you go from, well, it's like a gas, for example. Gas is kind of pricey now because people are driving now. People are really trying to drive. At the beginning of the pandemic, no one was driving anywhere. Everyone was home for like 3 months. Prices of gas dropped. Then when people started driving more, they wanted to raise production on oil, but they didn't want, because they took a loss, like producing that amount of gas for no one buying. And so they wanted to raise production, but they still wanted to be safe in the possibility that there is another shutdown and then the price, the demand would go right down. So, I mean, this is just an example with gas, but when you have that kind of gradually going up, looking at the pandemic, seeing how when people will purchase certain things, you're going to have, inflation. I don't think there's any way around it. And aside from that, too, is just the job market, where it's kind of nuts. Over the summer, it was crazy, especially in, the tech sector and I would say probably, any industry probably. And it puts people in a position to negotiate higher wages. And in that instance, you have companies trying to make up for that loss of handing out raises, now raising the price of certain things. I could see that. But, if they didn't, though, how would these CEOs feed themselves? They're, just family men.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing I want to say about CEOs. CEOs definitely, they get paid a good amount of money, too. But, a lot of folks say these, billionaires, they got so much money. But their money is mostly in stock.
Yeah.
That they legally can't just unload and liquidate because it would cause all these issues with, insider trading and all that.
Right.
So they have to set up these regular intervals at which they siphon the stock into cash.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to put that out there because I feel bad sometimes for these tycoons.
Yeah, me too. tycoons. Makes me think of them as like oil barons with like the mustache and the monocle. And they're like, I'm a businessman.
Now we have rocket barons.
Yeah.
And
people with like, you know, laid back clothing. But they're like, I'm the cool CEO.
Yeah.
I wear a sweatshirt.
Did you see that Leo DiCaprio and Jeff Bezos thing?
I did, yeah. How much do you think Leo is worth?
Oh, damn it.
Wait, did we do Leo?
I feel like we did Leo.
Then I guess that doesn't count. We already did Leo.
Is that how it works?
I'm making a new rule.
All right, I'm okay with that. But I don't think we made the rule yet.
No. We just made it now, so you do have to guess Leo's net worth.
$30
million. Let me look it up.
And you get a point just for raising, asking the question. While he's looking it up, I want to...
Oh, you're way off.
Really?
It's 260.
260 million?
Yeah. It's probably from all the... You know, he's raising money for the environment.
And he just pockets it.
And, you know...
And he's like, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. Just give me time.
He needs all of the money for his 19-year-old girlfriends.
Yeah. Probably. So do you think that cryptocurrency can help with inflation, or do you think it's not going to matter at all? It's going to make it worse?
Wait, repeat that question.
Do you think cryptocurrency,
right,
if we started moving more of our financial transactions into that, could help with inflation, like offset it?
I don't know, because I feel like even cryptocurrency is due for a reckoning. Something's got to go with that.
What do you think is going to happen there?
I feel like Bitcoin's going to just nosedive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When
I have no proof or any of that. It's a gut feeling.
The only thing I can see it being is...
Because the deep state.
I mean, Bitcoin came out and it's like, oh, we're a currency, but it's not really. It's more of a way to hold value. It's like the new gold.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it will nosedive, but... I don't think it's going to ever be what it said it was going to be.
Yeah. I mean, anything will hold value if there's enough people deciding it's valuable.
Yeah.
You know, like Beanie Babies.
Mm-hmm. That's where...
That's where you should be keeping your money.
I think that might be
that's
where...
That's the big takeaway from this segment. I think this segment isn't just the inflation situation. I think this is Anton's financial corner. Where he gets sound financial advice from me.
Yeah, I give financial advice that people should definitely heed.
If people listen to us about cars and financials, they'd probably have no problems whatsoever.
The world would be better.
The world would be better.
Are you concerned at all about inflation?
No.
Okay. So it's not going to change your behavior in any way, you don't think?
I mean, I gotta change my behavior. I needed to change it before inflation anyways.
What do you gotta do different?
Yeah, I gotta stop like eating out and like getting lunch all the time. And
buying those $5 coffees.
Yeah, buying those $5 coffees.
You think Jeff Bezos buys $5 coffees?
I think that's why we can't afford $1 million house, is because I keep buying these $5 coffees every weekend.
Yeah, it adds up to $1 million pretty quick.
Yep.
So you're not looking to save money, or you're more interested in saving more money than like investing or anything like that?
I mean, I invest.
Yeah. Can you tell people what to invest in?
No, because my you're talking to a guy that bought a bunch of Dogecoin as a joke and was awarded a free GameStop stock. And so like when all that Doge and GameStop happened, I made, $1,000 and
you did.
I was like, hey,
I had no idea. Wait, I think we talked about the GameStop, but I don't remember talking about the Dogecoin.
Yeah, I bought Dogecoin like way before that whole thing last year.
Oh, yeah? And, do you still have it?
Yeah, I still have it.
Is it doing pretty good?
I think so. I think it's still only... I think at one point it was like $1,500. I think now it's like $800. But I had spent like $10.
Yeah, so that's a huge ROI.
So, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we should have you give financial advice.
All my financial advice is based off of funny instincts and just jokes. So don't listen to me.
Sarcastic approach to financial
or
planning.
Or like, I'll like hear something and I'll go like, oh, there's probably a stock for that, and then I'll buy it. Like I had heard a competitor to Tesla went public.
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
I mean, there's lots of them.
It's something with an R. I forget the name of it.
Race car?
I don't know. But I was like, oh, big brain. I'm going to buy one stock of that. So.
I mean, that's not a long-term investment unless it can actually work out.
Yeah. Who knows? I'm just guessing.
That's what everybody's doing.
All it is gambling.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like fantasy football.
Yeah.
And I've won hundreds of dollars playing that.
I haven't. I just get bored and stop making trades. But I think that's the end of the financial corner inflation station segment.
All right.
So that's
it. Well, this next segment was created by you.
Yes.
But I'm flipping it around.
Oh, wow. What do you mean you're flipping it? This is based on real things that happen.
No, it's not. So a lot of people write into the show and they usually ask me for advice.
Yeah, they do.
Until we get a letter. And it turns out someone was asking Anton for advice.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. It's crazy. We got a letter from...
I don't believe that.
We got a letter from Chris with a K with two S's. So it's not me because they have two S's.
Wow.
Yeah. Dear Anton. My girlfriend Tammy always borrows my battery bank whenever I have it fully charged for my own emergencies. And then she uses it, drains the battery, then leaves it on her desk or somewhere I don't know about. And then when I go to use it, it's completely drained.
Hmm.
How do I bring this up to her without sounding really petty about a battery bank?
This is a really great question,
so, Chris
with
two S's.
S's.
Like, it sounds like it's a small thing, which it is. But I think he's just concerned with, like, how do you bring that up without sounding just like...
So as another Chris, you're kind of an interpreter for Chris's.
I'm just assuming what the letter sounds like.
Yeah. So a battery bank, this Chris charges it up, and this Tammy comes along, maybe not even asking, just sees it's ready to go.
Oh, well, like, it says here in the notes, Tammy does ask to borrow.
Okay. Tammy asks.
She's very, sounds like she's very respectful.
Tammy does ask.
Yeah. This Tammy person sounds like she's very respectful of other person's items.
I mean,
I'm assuming she's
respectful
is.
In terms of asking, but then just leaves it drained.
Right.
It's like borrowing somebody's car with a full tank of gas and then returning
bringing it back with any gas. Yeah.
It's pretty scummy.
Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, I can't ask you, but...
Do you want to know how many times it's happened? Because he wrote that in
letter. Oh, he has addendums to this letter? Sure.
Well, there's a list of, like, key facts.
Oh, okay.
But...
Standard letter stuff.
Just depends on what questions you have.
So, I don't think you understand how this is supposed to work.
It's happened, like, 2 to 3 times.
2 to 3 times, okay. Well, Chris, with two S's... I would say, why don't you just try to bring it up and say, hey, babe, I love you, but there was an emergency. I charged this so that it's good for emergencies. Mm-hmm. and I rely on it. Could you charge it up? Another thing that I would say here is, I think most people want to do the right thing when it's easy.
Right.
So if you make it easy, maybe paint a part of your house bright orange that like draws your attention to where the charger is. Make the charger like so you can stick it right in and easy to go. Make me make a ding sound when you put it charged in. So you're just like, ooh, I want to get that ding. All of those things would probably encourage you to charge it.
Yeah. You mean Chris with a K with two S's?
You meaning, I'm talking to Chris, like, who's listening to this. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, that's really good advice for Chris with two S's. I think that's the end of the segment.
That's it? All right. I'm glad I could help. Our next segment is planned obsolescence. This is a maybe design corner.
Interesting. We've never really talked about design.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of design when it's done thoughtfully. So recently I watched this Veritasium video because the way I learn things is by watching YouTube videos.
As we all.
Yeah. And this Veritasium video talked about planned obsolescence. And I learned a few things that I never researched afterward to find out if they're true, but I assume so. One was that the Model T was originally designed to be super like long-lasting. Right. Like Henry Ford wanted the Model T, like you buy the car once and you're good for life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there was no real cars before that point, so what are you... you're not thinking about like competition or anything like right. that.
Especially in a thing that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Like modern car culture didn't exist. So like, you know, millions of people didn't rely on it for transportation. So you thought of it as like something like a tractor where
yes,
exactly. you buy a tractor and it's supposed to mow your lawn for 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which probably they don't work like that anymore.
Well,
buy a tractor and you gotta get a new tractor next year.
My dad still has a 30-year-old John Deere.
That's because back then John Deere
weren't scummy.
Yeah. So Model T is an example of this. Light bulbs, apparently, in the early days, there was a lot of competition among the light bulb manufacturers to make the light bulbs last as long as they possibly could.
Right, because that's like a selling point.
Yes. However, all the light bulb manufacturers quickly realized that if they are competing on this front, they're only hurting each other and hurting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they all got together in like Europe somewhere.
And controlled the market.
Yes. And they said, let's stop making light bulbs last so long. And they went in the opposite direction and slowly started making them not last as long.
Like, so it's something that you have to replace.
Yes, exactly.
And
however, the weird thing is we have LED light bulbs now, which do last crazy long, sometimes longer than you'd even like live in your apartment or your house.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think people... That's why I never understood. Like, why would you have to make them not last as long? Because people are always going to be buying new, new ones, you know.
Why would they buy new ones if the... Like, if a light bulb works, I'm not thinking about it. I'm not going to buy another light bulb.
No.
Like, it's not something where I'm like, man, I got to get that new light bulb. It just turns on and it's good and I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
But one more example of this is iPhones. I think this is the most heinous example. Is the first iPhone, you could take the battery out.
Mm-hmm.
Every iPhone since, you can't. Not only that, there was that whole issue where people noticed that if they upgraded their phone to the latest operating system, the phone ran way worse.
Yeah, that happens.
And Apple came out and said, oh, it's not a big deal because it's we did it to preserve the battery, which is a thing that they control, and nobody wants their phone to be that thin. Apple wants you to think you want your phone to be super thin, but I don't really care.
No.
So overall, with all these examples, what's your opinion on planned obsolescence? Are you for it?
I mean, I think it depends. Because if you're thinking of if you're creating something with the idea that you're going to create a newer version of it that's going to have better features,
mm-hmm.
like, it's not like a bad, like, let's say you create, like, you know, a mug.
Yep.
And at the time, you know, I mean, you create this mug that will last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple years down the road, they create one with a handle so you can hold hot liquids in it.
Yeah.
So while you created one that will last forever, you've still invented a newer version of it that works better than the old version.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you're designing the original with the idea that you're going to create a newer version, then how long do you really have to make it last for?
Well, that assumes that people are going to be like...
Because then you're kind of budgeting. Like, let's say you can make a high-quality product for... I mean, I'm just throwing as an example. Like, let's say it's $1 million, you can make this last forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get away with $500,000, but the thing's going to break in 5 years. But in 5 years, you're going to use less of that $500,000, the extra $500,000, to design and implement a way better version. What's wrong with that?
I guess I don't know what you're arguing for. You're saying planned obsolescence is good?
Yeah.
But you are also arguing and saying adding new features would be a way to not need planned obsolescence. It would entice people to buy something even if the thing they already have is working just fine.
I guess it could go either way, right?
Like, I just got this new laptop.
Yeah.
The laptop I had, perfectly fine. Really great laptop I had.
Yeah.
I've had it for 5 years, but it still runs just...
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. It was running out of space, but I mean, I could have mitigated that in different, cheaper ways.
Yeah. But you refused to buy an external hard drive for...
I have a lot of external hard drives. It's just plugging them in. You got to take it out of your drawer.
Oh, you're right.
You got to drag stuff around. But the new features was what was appealing to me,
mm-hmm.
and the speed increases and all of that. So I do wonder, like, if Apple didn't have to make the planned obsolescence for iPhones, if people would just buy new ones anyway, because
that's the thing,
the improvements.
Like, I say, you know, at the time, I remember buying my, it's like a Casio Boulder. Do you remember those?
No. What is that?
It was a flip phone in like
Boulder 2000, was the name of the model?
2007. Yeah, because it was like a Boulder. It was indestructible.
Oh,
it had an interchangeable. Circular? It had a battery that comes off, but it was also like a really thick battery.
Yeah,
That lasted a long time, and it was like drop proof. It was waterproof.
Mm-hmm.
It was orange. It was like for construction workers.
Oh, cool.
It lasted me a really long time, but it's like, who wants that when there's an iPhone?
Yeah, but what if they could make an iPhone that just lasted 10 years? Or 20 years.
But, like, even then, like, I mean, they do. Like, or my MacBook, for example.
Yeah.
It's just that the technical, like, they are able to put in a processor that just, you know, I mean, it's advancement. It's just, it offers way more things in your whole landscape of, like, how you used the original thing to begin with has changed. So, like, I don't know.
I don't know what you mean. You're saying that, like...
Like, devices, the use for your device has also changed, and it needs to keep up with, like, the advancements in technology.
Yeah. So you think it's too hard for the companies to keep the old devices up to date?
Yeah, because it's just not useful anymore.
Like, I see a lot of people talk about we have crazy computing power now, mm-hmm. but still programs are slow. So what's going on there?
I don't know. I think it's probably got to do with all the programmers.
It is true. There is what one big innovation that's happened is because computers are faster, we've been starting to use programming languages that let the computer do more of the work of memory management and all that kind of stuff. And that actually can make the programs run more slowly. But you can develop them faster and change them faster.
Yeah.
But I think there's a middle ground there. Do you think businesses would go bankrupt if they made products last forever?
No.
Because you think they'll just make new features?
Well, I think they would just always have new customers.
Until they...
And
I mean, every market has a certain saturation
point. But like what I'm saying is like the indestructible device, they don't have to worry about that outlasting the customer. They have to worry about the customer outlasting that.
What do you mean?
So
you think that businesses should just start killing people so they don't outlast products?
I think that's the way.
It's a lifelong warranty.
Yeah.
And they just they send somebody out to kill you.
Yeah. And then they will, and new people will be born.
Yeah.
Therefore.
Yeah, but you could hand down your iPhone.
Yeah.
Which does happen quite a bit. Like a lot of people's first thing is a hand-me-down.
Mm-hmm.
But
like, you know what I mean? Like, I bought an old car.
Mm-hmm.
That car is still lasting.
Yep.
So it's not like they messed up by building a car. Like, if they would have built a car that broke down, the person that owned it would have been so mad that it broke down that they would have bought a different car.
So there's a certain duration expectation, but right. I feel like cars today could probably last way longer. Tires, cars, I bet there's so many things about them that could last longer than they are, and they're just not designing it to work like that.
Yeah.
So do you think it's a net positive or a net negative, planned obsolescence?
I don't know. Positive?
I think it's negative. So you're wrong. You
did. Can you dock points?
Yeah.
We should make a rule where you can dock
points. We just all start with 0 points, and it's just whoever's the least negative at the
end.
How about,
here's a rule. Once a month, you can dock a point for any arbitrary reason that you see. All right. You don't have to do it. But you can, and then just not to abuse it, you can only limit yourself to once a month.
All right, I'm on board with that.
All right, rule changed.
So you think planned obsolescence is good? I don't really know if there's anything else to say there. I was trying to think, like, long-term, what if companies always did try to make something that lasts forever? Like, every single thing they make.
Yeah, I'm not even concerned about people making things that last forever. I'm more concerned of how to like make things that can be like not environmentally impactful.
Well, that's part of how you would do it.
You'd have less waste.
Yeah, because we're not throwing things out. You're just continuing to use it.
If they can figure out how to design long term with expectations of how to grow, like, I mean, your iPhone is basically the same the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They need to create a way where you don't have to throw out the entirety of the iPhone.
You can recycle it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we do, is we send it back to Apple and they give you a discount on your next one.
I don't know.
But I mean, the best, even recycling takes energy. The best thing you could do is have a product that lasts a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And recycle it on top of that. Like, do both.
Yeah.
I just think that it's totally possible, and it lets businesses off the hook. Instead of having to like try to think of that new feature that's going to entice somebody to buy a new thing, they are focusing on the fashion side of it and making it like slightly aesthetically different.
Right, but the aesthetics kind of merge into the design functions, and it's an improvement of how you use it.
Hmm. Like, I got the iPhone 12, and I love the way this looks because it's how the iPhone 4 looked with the flat edges. I really like that.
Right.
I'm probably not going to buy a phone again until... If the next phones aren't like that, I'm not going to buy
If you had a new phone with new computing power, but it had the interface of what the iPhone 4 looked like...
Yeah.
you'd probably be driven to insanity to the point where, I don't know.
Why?
I don't, who even knows how many people would die? Because, like, have you ever tried, like, I remember finding my old iPod and just, like, trying to use it. It was nuts. It just didn't, little things change.
Yeah, but that's on you. It should still last forever.
Right, but you're now adapting to a newer function of UI that using old ones just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but I think that's a contrary, like, you could still make the iPod last. And people will still upgrade because they want to get the new feature. But I think all products should last, like, as long as you can possibly do it. But I don't know if there's much else to say about this segment. We're about over time, probably.
I can't keep track because I'm in your apartment and I don't have my computer here, really. And I can't look at the scroll thing. So you're off the hook for going over time.
All right, well, that's the end of that segment.
I got a segment.
Oh, good.
Okay. You know, we're normally big movie buffs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we... I mean,
emphasis on the buff.
Yeah, we're buffs that like movies. Before COVID, we would go frequently this time of year because this is when all the award movies are out.
Yeah,
it's true. And we like to see what ones are going to win. The Oscars. The Golden Globes, the Independent Spirit Awards.
Oh, yeah, the big ones.
The People's Choice Awards.
That's put on by The Rock.
Yeah. So we like to know all the smart people movies so we can say that we're smart by watching it. But I'd have to say, because we don't go to the movies as much the last 2 years, I mean, although we're going more now.
Yeah.
It's still kind of a different landscape in, like, I felt completely, like, what are the big award movies this year?
Right.
You know them? That sounds like a no.
Maybe French Dispatch is in there?
Well, I left that one out of the game because I knew you knew that one.
Dune is probably so in there.
So, I made a game.
Okay.
Where is this a 2022 awards contender or nonsense?
All right.
So how is this going to work? There's, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 rounds.
Okay.
Each round, I give you 3 titles.
All right.
You got to tell me which of the 3 is the 2022 awards contender.
Okay.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
If you get 4 out of the 7, you get a point.
Okay.
That's all you got to do. All right. It's kind of like the Manson game last time.
Okay. 4 out of 7.
All right. Round 1. Liverpool, Manchester, Belfast.
What do I do?
Which one is the awards contender? Which movie? Liverpool, Manchester, or Belfast? One of them's the name of a movie that's going to be nominated for awards this year.
Manchester?
That's incorrect. It's Belfast.
Ah! Liverpool, you just threw in there because all the talk of the Beatles?
No, I just threw it in there because it's a city in the UK.
Oh, okay. Belfast is in the UK?
Yeah, it's in Northern Ireland, which technically...
Northern Ireland?
Ireland.
Oh, got it. It's part, of the UK. Yeah, okay. Got it.
All right, next round.
Damn, I'm in the hole. Okay. Yep.
Don't Look Down. Looking up. Don't look up. That's right. That's the. You probably saw the preview for
I did see the preview for that one, yeah.
That's an easy one. I thought I'd give you an easy one.
I get a point.
This one's a trick question, but it'll be easy if you get it right.
Okay.
The Tragedy of Macbeth,
mm-hmm.
King Richard, The Queen.
Queen is an old movie. That's already happened. I think King Richard.
That's correct. But you also had a 2 out of 3 shot because The Tragedy of Macbeth is also correct. Because that's Joel Coen's movie.
Making it really easy for me. Joel Coen's making, like, is this a historical piece or is that just a funny title?
No, it's like based on Shakespeare's Macbeth.
He's So he's not writing anything? He's just directing Macbeth?
Yeah, with Denzel Washington. It looks really cool. The trailer is really cool.
Who's Lady Macbeth?
I think Frances McDormand's wife.
Oh, neat. I want to make Alyssa be Lady Anton.
Okay.
I'll talk to her about it. Let
me know how that goes. I don't know the whole cast.
Did it come out already?
No, it premiered at the New York Film Fest, but I don't think it's out till Christmas.
Ooh, we gotta go see that. That'll be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Oklahoma, mm-hmm. West Side Story, Singing in the Rain.
West Side Story. That's an easy one.
All right, so you already got three.
All right, so I just gotta get one more, and I'm
one of the three.
Finally, gonna win this kind of game.
The Power of the Dog, The Height of Power, The Presence of Mind.
Power of the Dog.
That's right. You already got it.
Do you want to do the last one? The weirdest sounding one. Yeah, I want to keep playing.
All right. Nightmare East.
Okay.
Nightmare Alchemy.
Okay.
Nightmare Alley.
Nightmare Alley.
Yeah, that's right.
I think
you know.
That's the one. Is that the one?
They're advertising on Subways.
Yeah. What's his name? Shallows guy. Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. All right. Last one. Red Dawn. Mm-hmm. Red Rooster. Red Rocket.
Red Rocket.
Yeah, that's right.
That's that new
Tangerine guy. You lied to me.
Well, I mean, I see a lot of movies. I'm looking forward to Red Rocket. That looked really cool.
Yeah, it does look good.
When is that out? Do you know?
Not sure. But I definitely see
that. I gotta go see a movie tonight. I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah.
So I'll see if Alyssa wants to go see a movie. Great. I needed one. Now we are both divisible by three. 18 to 21.
Oh, good. I was worried about that.
Last segment.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big one. You might want to look
at it. Oh, yeah. I'm acting like I was like, what is it? So you've been working on your game,
yep.
Pluribus.
Yes.
And you've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
You do the live streams every morning.
Mm-hmm. Every weekday.
You work on it, and you started getting more viewers.
Here and there. I dabble.
You're getting them sprinkled in.
Yeah. Some days I get viewers.
But remember the first week, nobody. No.
Yeah.
Just me.
Yeah, just you. You prime
that.
You
get a couple randos.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of randos.
So I wanted to check in now that you're Twitch superstar, and I just want to see.
Followers.
I heard you made some progress on E Pluribus.
Yes.
And I want to know more about the progress.
Yeah. So I don't remember if we've ever talked about it on this show.
And then what is it for people that haven't, that are unfamiliar with E Pluribus?
Yeah, that's a good question. So E Pluribus is a game that was inspired by like two different ideas that I had.
Mm-hmm.
One was I really love mediums and taking advantage of mediums.
Like psychic mediums?
Yes. I love mediums. No, like
the show.
Actually, I had a chat last night, well, over pizza, where somebody was making the tying the psychic kind of medium to the actual like medium of
medium
of
pizza.
Art. Yeah. Oh. No, that like I don't remember the details, but it's somewhat of a stretch. But you get poetic license, I guess, for it.
Yeah.
But I love mediums. I like The Watchmen, the comic book, because it takes advantage of that medium really well.
Right.
I like, I don't know, the early... Who's that person who does not stop motion, but silent films and...
Charles Chaplin?
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin is one, but Buster Keaton.
Yeah, he's very creative.
Really good at using...
I think Buster Keaton's a little better than Charlie Chaplin.
That's what I've been hearing. But they use the medium of film
right.
in a really cool and innovative way.
Well, they
way.
Use the limitations of it
yes.
really well.
This is what I mean.
Considering that, you know, you didn't have sound, you didn't have a lot of the editing
mm-hmm.
technology. So you're saying you wanted to create something that really uses the medium of something like Twitch or the
exactly.
internet?
Exactly. Twitch, internet. What are the things afforded by that medium
yeah.
that can do stuff you can't do any other way?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing with Twitch its big selling point is that it's somebody, it's a bunch of people watching somebody play a video game.
Yeah.
Doesn't always have to be that way, but that's what they found when they made live streaming, that the most popular thing that they had out was watching people play video games, which mm-hmm. is interesting.
Yeah.
So the problem is most of the games that you're watching be played are not taking advantage of Twitch very well. Like, there's not games designed with Twitch in mind,
yeah.
per se. Maybe there's more happening over time, but a lot of times it's just like, hey, I made a game and people can watch it if they want.
Yeah.
So that was one idea. How can I make a game that really takes advantage of Twitch? The other idea was, really like Mario Maker, and I like designing levels and games and stuff, and I love the idea of democratizing design so other people yeah. can design things. And I've played Dungeons & Dragons before. I've made levels for people before, and usually the way it is you have a single person designing a level for lots of people to play.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be really funny and interesting. What if you totally inverted that and you had a lot of people all designing a level for one person to play one time and that's it?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The whole, what if you had a 9 ladies, you can make a baby in 1 month.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Which, I wonder what that would be like.
You just, somebody would do the foot, another person would do like a hand.
That probably makes sense.
And you stitch it together like Voltron.
Yeah.
You get a Voltron baby.
Well, so anyways, how long have you been working on it?
I've been working on this, I don't know. I had the idea probably over a year ago, but only really started picking up on it in the last month or two.
Okay.
I feel like I've been streaming since early November. I'm not sure when I first streamed.
Okay. Well, so how far along has the game gotten? Like, what can you do with it?
Right now, I just hit a big milestone, which is, just put it out there, I don't know what the game is going to be yet. Like, I know that I want it to be high Twitch integration where people are designing levels, but I don't know what the resulting game is going to be like.
Right.
So where I'm at now is I have Twitch integration working, so you can log into it with your Twitch account using mm-hmm. OAuth, and you can see the Twitch chat. You can create and design a level by drawing colored squares.
That's pretty cool.
And then they show up in 3D, and the player can play through the level, and they have to get from a start position to a goal position. And that's all I have right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got basic collision detection. The graphics is just a bunch of colored rectangles in 3D.
Cool. And so you're still doing this over streaming?
Yes.
Each morning?
Yeah.
Or most mornings?
No, every weekday morning I've consistently done it. I haven't missed a morning yet.
So it's going good. Is it helping with the process?
It's very much more. It's more helpful for me to stream myself doing it, I would say, than for folks watching. Maybe not good to say, but it helps a lot to like talk through what you're trying to do, and the pressure of like doing it live, which seems to like off the cuff, like it would be discourage you from making progress.
Yeah.
It's very encouraging, especially when I hit hiccups or challenges. Usually I give up and walk away, but now that I have a streaming schedule, I stick with it at least until the end of my stream.
Yeah.
And I've been making consistent progress as a result.
Okay, great. And so like where you are now with how far along the game is, and then also with Twitch and like how long you've been doing that. What's kind of next in line for the process to get to where you want it to go?
Playtesting is a big next thing. Uh-huh. So again, I don't know what the game is going to be like, but I have a working game right mm-hmm. now. There's a cycle where you just draw into the level, and right now it's just collision detection. So you bang into right. the rectangles. So you could technically make a maze. And maybe you and I after this stream could try that out.
Yeah.
I have the website up. It's trackedpursuit.com mm-hmm. because I didn't want to buy another domain name because I'm lazy. So I just used one.
Oh, your old website that where you chased after tracksuits?
Yeah, well, it's tracked. T-R-A-C-T. Like a tract of land. I used a random word generator to buy that domain. And then I already had it and I already had a server up. So I just wanted to reuse it.
Oh, okay. So people can now start to try it?
They can try it. You can play with your friends, or every morning is my plan is to
join the live stream and then you play.
Exactly. It's going to be the most meta thing ever.
Right.
Because I'm making a game about making games, and I'm going to play that game to get help from people on how to make the game about making games live using Twitch integration.
Okay.
So it's a very deep process, I would say.
Compared to like maybe 6 months ago when you've kind of had this nugget of an idea, do you feel just more confident about the direction that it's heading now?
Yeah. Like, I don't know where it's going, but I had a stream the other day, and a guy popped on. Guy or girl, actually, don't have no idea. Or they, them, not sure. And really great participant in the... was very chatty with me in the chat and gave a really cool idea about what if you could hide items in the level. And I was like, man, that's really cool. Never would have thought of it. And if interactions like that can happen over the next weeks and months where people pop on and just throw out an idea and then we try it and see how it goes, I think we'll end up collectively with a pretty cool game at the end of this that is kind of crowdsourced in an interesting way.
Cool. Well, it sounds like a lot of big developments.
Yeah.
From it. What are you most excited about?
I'm excited about seeing where it goes and not knowing where it's going to end up right now.
You sound way less worried about it.
Oh, interesting.
I feel like you'd get worried about ideas before.
What do you mean by worried?
I guess a lot of people get like this, especially in initial phases of ideas, that you get worried too much about the outcome before you really start.
Yeah.
But then now that you've started, you really trust in the not knowing anything, and you just figure out a way to keep forwarding it every day, like moving it forward.
Yeah. Actually, it's really great that you point that out. So, you know the book American Gods?
Yeah.
By Neil Gaiman?
Gaiman?
Is it Gaiman?
I don't know. G-A-I-M?
Yeah, I don't...
I guess we'll never know.
Well, yeah. By Neil. Neil G. In the foreword for that book, he talks about the writing process. And I love processes. Right. I
create them all the time.
Yes. Yes. As a programmer. But I love creative processes. And I think that it's, as a creative person, I think the most important thing you can do is come up with a creative process instead of the thing you're trying to make.
Right.
Because if you make a cool process, what comes out of it
is different.
Is different. It's new.
But you can replicate the process.
Yeah, but you don't want to necessarily either.
Well, then what's the point of coming up with the process?
For the one thing you're trying to make.
Right. So you're saying the process has its own lifespan.
Yes.
Where it is not repeatable.
And in figuring out the process, if you can figure out the process and then trust the process...
Yeah, trust the process.
It doesn't matter what the outcomes are. So Neil said that he was working on American Gods, and he got to the point where he figured out the process for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And once he had the process figured out, the book just flowed because he'd figured out the strategy for writing it.
Okay.
And that each book was different that he's written or story in a distinct process.
Interesting. I usually just try to repeat the process.
You should make a new process each time so you can get different outcomes.
That's a good point.
And then you can just, you don't have to worry about the outcome at that point. You're just like following the process and seeing what comes out. And then it's delightful and exciting.
Right. And you're not really worried about the thing itself.
Yeah. So I feel like
I... Very sound advice.
Yeah. I'm very excited about working on this game, which is really crazy for me because I've never been excited about the work for anything before. I only want the outcomes. Now I'm excited to wake up in the morning and see if anybody's on there to give feedback or ideas. The process is really cool and fun. I would recommend that for your own creative endeavors, figuring out a new process for each thing. I see it in video games all the time because I watch a lot of things on video game design. Breath of the Wild, the way that they have a huge map in that game, and it was kind of like empty map, didn't have a lot going on in it. they figure it out collectively. There was a 300-person team that worked on it. That's a really big team to be developing a video game. Yeah. How do you coordinate those people? Well, what they did was they made the map first.
Right.
And then they would just let people run around in the map, and they made tools for the developers to like add little bookmarks at points in the map and say, hey, it's boring here. And they had like little rules for folks that they told the design team. Like, if you're running through the map and you want to do something cool, put like a mountain in the way so that there's always some kind of obstacle for someone to go around to get to that thing.
Yeah.
So that there's always something to do nearby.
Yeah.
As a result, that game, like when I play it, I always have something in mind that I want to do. I'm getting excited. I want to go play it again.
Yeah.
There's always something like, oh, I got to go do this objective. But on the way to that objective, there's all these little things along the way that distract me. Right. And I end up doing all those things. And every time I play Breath of the Wild, I have a totally different experience as a result of that. And it's because of the design process they came up with that led to that game. Once they came up with the process, you can have a big game like that where a lot of people are working on it.
Yeah.
Just got to figure out the process.
Hmm. Very sound advice. But cool.
That's all I have to say, I guess. Unless you had other questions.
No.
Sweet. All right. I guess that's our show.
Well, that was a good show. A lot of design questions.
Yeah.
Processes.
Yeah. Are you stoked to go work on your movie script?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Maybe you're not. I don't know.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about that next time.
We'll see. All right. See you later.
Bye.